Welcome to the Digital Agency Growth Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Englander. Today's episode is sponsored by our company, Sales Schema, and we are a fractional new business team for marketing agencies and related marketing service companies. Even if you're not at the point of being able to hire a company like ours, I still want to do my best to help out. And today we are giving away access to our most recent recorded video training titled Relationship-Driven New Business at Scale, emphasis on at scale. This is all about how we secure 5 to 20 weekly brand agency relationships for each one of our clients using tasteful email outreach centered on personal and or business commonalities. A few things we cover. We cover the two big shifts that have created a huge need for this approach and why we think you should rethink the way your agency builds relationships and does new business. We cover the specifics on dozens of commonalities that we have used successfully to build relationships between agencies and brand side decision makers. We cover a simple follow-up process that you can use for your team, even if you're busy, even if you're in a mixed role between sales and client service. And we cover actual copy examples that you can use to get inspired and build your own campaigns. So if you'd like to get access to the video training, which runs about 30 minutes or so, you can do that by going to salesschema.com/relationships. Again, salesschema.com/relationships, plural. So if you're running an agency, you might think that you're doing the work, right? The capital T, capital W work. But in reality, what's happening is the lowercase t, lowercase w work. And I think another way of thinking about this that today's guests kind of enlightened for me is really the work about work. You know, where is the information stored? How is it communicated? And that sort of thing. In the issues and the cracks in the armor kind of associated with the work about work, tend to, you know, multiply or go exponential when you're in a situation of scale, right? When you're trying to scale up and hire people and so on and so forth. So today's guest is you know, really one of the foremost experts on Asana and is definitely somebody that's been thinking about these problems a lot in a lot of different agency situations for a very long time. So Marquis Murray is the founder of Ditto and Asana Solutions Partner, among many other things. And in his role, he helps agencies create clarity around the work done inside of organizations through creating SOPs, documenting processes, and automating workflows to make work easier. So I really enjoyed this episode because we didn't just, you know, nerd out on tools and on like how to set things up for this one silver bullet way that's going to work for every situation. Instead, we talked about broad concepts of how these tools can kind of slot together and also how to, you know, scale intelligently using these things. So I learned a lot from this. I selfishly got all sorts of insights to use in our own company that I think will apply to most of our listeners in the agency world. So without further ado, please give it up for Marquis Murray. Marquis, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me here, Dan.
Yeah. So we were just catching up on the lovely Rickenbacker bass you have in the background. And normally when I'm in New York, I have like my Martin D28 on the wall, but I'm traveling. I'm in Austin now. So I have somebody else's background, which is lots of very like, you know, kind of highbrow art books that are not mine. So I feel like I'm taking credit for interests that I don't have. So for better or worse.
My wife's an interior designer. It looks like something she would have put together as far as styling the shelves go. So
definitely
approve.
Yeah. So I've no stake in this, unfortunately. So, but anyway, it's great to connect. I think that, process alignment, tech, all these things, bear repeating and bear like lots of different perspectives on. So it's great to have you on the show. And I guess my first question is, you know, I went on your site and there's a really interesting, calculator on operational inefficiency and sort of how that pans out. So I'd love to just kind of start with your perspective on operational efficiency, how you define that, you know, what are the common ways that plays out in a professional services or agency environment?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, the calculator is interesting because, I mean, that obviously takes a lot of data we've comprised from different, you know, research surveys and different articles and things like that. But generally, the problem that, you know, I see when we're approaching businesses is that, you know, there's this problem with work about work, right? And that's not a term that we coined. One of our tech partners, Asana, they are, you know, diligent in eliminating this issue, which is it's all the in-between stuff. There is generally a sense of knowledge and understanding around the processes within any business, how we do anything, how we meet, how we deliver clients' projects, how we, you know, set up client accounts, right? There are these things that tend to happen, and all that knowledge is stored away with the owner, the operator, the principal, because they are the ones that started the business. They have that understanding. And so there's typically this breakdown when it comes to scaling up and passing that information on to their subordinates, their successors, their team members as they expand. And the problem we see is that a lot of the work about work ends up replicating itself as far as like confusion or uncertainty around where certain things go. And that causes inefficiencies. Deadlines are missed. Teams are frustrated. They're misaligned. They're overworked because we are piling too much on their plates. We are stacking projects against each other, and there's no real visibility for the leaders or owners anymore because they're passing all these things off and they're now removed from those processes. So that inefficiency really is a huge issue, right? Because we're losing money and we might not know it. We're spending time and resources in areas that we shouldn't be, right? And sometimes it's often too late to see those things. And so what the calculator really does and why it's so prominent on the site is to get owners into a place where they understand and they can see that time that they're spending, they're exerting in training, resource management, in repeating a lot of the same processes or explaining a lot of those things over and over again. And we want them to see where their time is going and how working with a consultancy like Ditto can help them to alleviate that work about work again, which is all the stuff that happens in between the good skilled work that we're actually hired to perform for our clients.
Yeah, I love that phrase. And I actually never heard that before, the work about work concept. I guess with that in mind, to just kind of dig into the problems you're solving, can you get into that a little bit? Like when you're meeting with a new client and there's all these fires going on, like what are you asking during discovery and what are you typically finding?
Yeah, what we're asking is, you know, where are the problems? Where are the pain points? And what we find that generally it comes from the top down, right? It starts with the leadership. So we always ask if it's a CEO or they're typically in a space where they don't have a chief operating officer yet. And so we're coming in as that outsourced fractional COO to fill that gap. And so it's, what's the CEO doing? What are the things that they need to clear off of their plate and either reallocate to a subordinate or to a team member? Or is there a gap here where they need to actually hire someone? And so it's what's happening. And when there's typically like four pillars we'll center this around. And so it's like, well, what does your tech look like? Are you using, you know, the tools that you have properly? Are you underutilizing them? Are there manual things that you can, you know, potentially automate, right? And then we see, what does your team look like? How are you onboarding your team members? How are you doing training for your team members on an ongoing basis? Are there resources available for your team to grow and feel that they can, you know, complete their work effectively? Then we look at the leadership, right? You know, what does succession planning look like? What does admin look like? What does growth for the company look like? And we try and tie that back to a financial goal. And then there is simply systems, right? So what is your process documentation workflows look like? Who's involved in that? When's the last time you did kind of a process improvement exercise? How often are you looking at those things? And so we want to look at those four kind of areas. And then from that, we'll meet with leadership, we'll meet with team departments and individuals to kind of figure out what within that isn't working, what's broken, and how can we fix it? And so the real biggest areas we're finding, we're spending the majority of the time, is simply in the documentation and the housing of those documents? Like, where does the knowledge live? And that's where the biggest gaps we find are, and misalignment happens with teams, is some people are using, and within the same team, some people are using Dropbox, others are using Google Drive. Some people are using notes on their phone or their Apple computer, right? And so people set up their own conventions around how they think things should be stored and what works for them. But there's never like a coming together and an understanding that, you know, these things should be stored in the same place. We should all have access to the same resources and have that visibility. And actually, there's this kind of like phrase or mantra that like, I'm constantly training my team to like think about when it comes to process documentation, but it is, am I the only person who knows this information, and would others also benefit from this information? And like 99.9% of the time, the answer is yes, right? We are all subject matter experts to some degree, but the problem that happens is when that knowledge is kept with that SME and it's not distributed to the team, it's not communicated, and it's not put into practice. Silos are built. Again, visibility isn't met. And again, the people who really need that visibility, the team mainly, but the leadership above that, there are black holes. And so we work to kind of eliminate those things and pull them out through the discovery. And then we start working away at the highest priorities to start documenting those SOPs. And again, if there's tech that is needed to support it, we bring those pieces of tech in as well as needed.
Yeah. That's interesting. There's so much to dig into there. And I love the simplicity of that mantra. You know, am I the only one that knows this? Usually the answer is yes. Yeah. And then what others benefit? Usually the answer is yes. So That all makes sense. I guess, you know, one thing that I imagine comes up in your world to kind of play devil's advocate is, you know, okay, and we get this on the sales front. Can an outsider do this thing for us on the sales front? So I totally get it. But, you know, what do you say to that business owner that's like, we've been building this complex, whatever, media offering, consulting offering for this long? You know, can an outsider really come in and understand it well enough to fix it up operationally and do all these things? How do you guys typically handle that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And so it's kind of twofold. I mean, depending, and the audience is largely agencies, right? And so typically we see people in the creative space, they're so good at what they do creatively, but they lack this organizational aspect to their business. And it's kind of like building the plane on the way down in a lot of cases. And so that being said, they would have to like have already established kind of ground rules and a foundation around how they do things, right? There would have to be an understanding and a general like workflow. Even if it is like within one person's head, they would have to understand, you know, how that works, because we're really coming in to support that. If we're coming in, you know, too early in an engagement and saying like, okay, you guys have no processes, you have no systems, let's, you know, whiteboard this, then we're not going to be successful. Right. Because one thing that we don't want to do is create that for them the first time, work through them to build it all, do our training and onboarding, and then the engagement comes to an end, and then they're no better off because they didn't develop the processes on their own. And so, yeah, I actually think that's one of the mistakes that we see when we come in, is the CEO or leadership says, all right, here's the project team. You're going to work with them to build this out. And we do that, but then there's this like, again, gap between the project team and leadership where it's missed. And so I think that's a huge mistake. We don't want to be the ones that say, this is how you should do it. We don't want to pretend that we're coming in and after, you know, 5 or 6 hours of discovery can say, yep, we understand your business. This is how you should do it, right? We want to work in collaboration to build upon the foundations that have already been set. And we're just looking to see, okay, where are you at? Where are the inefficiencies? How can we optimize your current processes? And here are our best fit suggestions for how to do these things better. So it's really touchy because there are people that just have no idea and are kind of... recommendation to them is you need to take time as a team. You need to sit down. You need to, you know, make space for process improvement, where you sit down as a team and say, what do we have? What do we need? Where are the redundancies? And, you know, establish a foundation for that before you can bring in an outside consultant. Because if you do that, you're not ready, it can all fall apart.
Right. And that, I think that that makes a lot of sense. So and I don't want to put words in your mouth, so correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like it's almost like there needs to be product market fit, or, you know, product offering fit. Maybe there's an agency that has a bunch of different services and they're testing out one. And it's sort of like that Peter Drucker quote, you know, there's nothing so useless as doing efficiently that which should not be done at all. I actually wrote that down, so I don't have that memorized, but I'd love to hear. My memory's not that good. So I'd love to hear your take on that. Like, is there, I guess, at what point does it make sense to bring in a company like yours? I don't know if there's a revenue number or a certain stage that you think an agency or any other company should be at before they're considering like outside consulting.
Yeah, I think revenue stage is subjective, but I think, you know, as far as we always look at the org chart typically when we're starting and seeing are there gaps, are we looking to scale, and where we typically get called in is, I mean, now is an interesting time because a year ago, I think a lot of businesses were, you know, kind of uncertain as to where things were headed as far as business and where revenue was going to be coming from. But a lot of agencies and a lot of businesses have seen an upswing in new work come through. And that's typically where we get called in is, hey, we're scaling really quickly. We are going to be onboarding 15 new people in the next, you know, 2 months. We need help, right? And so you go from a really small operation, you're looking at 5 to maybe 10 people operation, and you say, how are we going to bring all these new people up to speed, you know, within a short amount of time? And so I would say, if you are scaling, if you know you're going to be experiencing, you know, growth, typically the agencies that we'll work with are in the, you know, 1 million to 3 million, you know, kind of, you know, revenue band. And so they have the resources to onboard that quickly. And then we also know that as far as like timelines go and resources, they have that to allocate to process improvement and development. So, I mean, again, revenue is kind of subjective because, you know, you can run a really lean shop and, you know, have, you know, impressive revenues or low. But I think if you're in a place of growth and you know that you're scaling quickly, and a lot of that stuff that you do is still like in your head, like there are terms like tribal knowledge or institutional knowledge where like if you need to get it out so that you can properly create workflows and create onboarding processes. And I think that is a really good place to start. And based on experience, it really doesn't matter who you are. I mean, there are always areas to tighten things up when it comes to onboarding for your team, both for your clients, right? And then there's always tech around it to support it. If you're looking and you're scaling quickly and you think our light CRM we've been using for 3 years is no longer good enough, we need to think about, you know, implementing like HubSpot. You know, we need to better supply or resource our sales team with something like Sales Pro, or we're looking for an ERP solution. And I think any like of those big changes, if you haven't thought about it already, is where you need to start thinking about hiring an outside consultant to assist you in that growth.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So it's almost like if you're trying to figure out, you know, if something's going to work, if you're trying to get it from 0 to 1, maybe there's a certain amount of just operational inefficiency you have to accept while you're figuring that out. But then once you do, and you're trying to scale it, then those situations become more alike than the same. And that's where somebody like yourself can really help out, if I understand right.
That's it.
Yeah, that's it. Cool. That makes sense. And so to get kind of like nerdy and tactical, one thing you mentioned earlier was, you know, the importance of documentation and the housing of docs. Like when you guys, you know, come on a ground level to solve these problems, that's the biggest thing that you encounter. So can you go into that a little bit? Like, how are most people doing it, and what's the better way to do it in terms of how the information is stored?
People seem to love spreadsheets. I don't know what it is about spreadsheets, but we'll typically go in and we'll see, whether it's Google Docs or, you know, Sheets, we'll typically see a document that has an infinite amount of tabs open, right? And within that, it houses kind of different processes. So that lives in, you know, kind of their Google Drive or their Dropbox, whatever that looks like. And where the confusion starts to set in is they have that one document that maybe is their master, but then they're requiring their team to collaborate on that doc. And there are different like naming conventions ways of doing things. And within one team, if you ask three team members that are all, you know, devs, you have your senior and maybe two juniors, if you ask them all how to do one specific task, you get three different answers, right? And it's because there's that confusion within that. So we have our spreadsheets where we're trying to document it, we're trying to stay on track. Some people are housing them inside of, you know, something like Confluence from Atlassian. A lot of teams use Notion, right? And so there are kind of redundancies happening because, again, within the same ecosystem, you have a small team that's using Notion, and then others are using Docs, and then others are using Asana, and then others are using Basecamp. And that's because these teams have gotten just so used to doing it their own way, and it's never been mandated to bring it all together. And so what that process really looks like, again, we start with leadership. We're doing interviews and understanding, what do you do? How does it all fit? What does your org chart look like at this level? And then we break it down to the individual teams as well. So what are you doing? How does it all fit together? Where are you in the org chart? And where can we bring some things together? And so typically it looks like bringing a lot of the systems into the same space. So whether it's migrating or updating, and then there's a training involved with these new tools. That's typically what it looks like. But, and then there are people where they're just like, we want to do this. But you know, give us a month, you know, we're going to hunker down. We're going to get it together. We're going to meet as a team. We'll get back to you. And then we're usually sent an unlimited number or an endless number, it seems like, of Google Docs, right? Where they've tried to just list everything out. And then from that, we need to make the connections, link them, and again, find out where the priorities are and then put them in the same space.
Right, right. That makes sense. And I'm guessing there's a lot of work that goes into that. So with that in mind, you know, how do these pieces fit together? Like, for example, we're on a combination of, you know, email and Drive, Docs and spreadsheets and Asana. Yeah. And I think that's mostly it. We've managed to stay off Slack for better or worse, but we're very, very small team. So we're not able to do that. So sure. I guess, like, how should you conceptualize tying these things together? Like, you said that people love spreadsheets. Is that just, is that a good thing or a bad thing, I guess, is what I'm getting at.
Sure. Before I answer that, I just want to ask about the Slack thing, if that's okay. So was that a pain point before you started and then you moved to eliminate it, or did you just never use it?
A little bit of both. Our team was always small enough where it just seemed kind of like a redundancy. So we couldn't really figure out where it fit in. And then if there was stuff that was urgent, it would, you know, it would usually be handled one-on-one for better or worse. And also we were working with like strategic partners that, you know, we couldn't really get on Slack for different reasons. So it just was kind of a logistical decision, but we may circle back to it. Yeah.
Got it. Okay, cool. To better answer your question, I mean, what we always try and encourage teams to do is to think about the different levels and different, like steps that need to be involved, right? If we need to get a file, right? How many steps are needed to like access that file, whether it's clicking through into different folders or subfolders, or if there's a larger space where it kind of all lives. And so what I kind of always like to do is, happy to hear that you guys use Asana. Asana is, you know, one of ours. We're Asana Solutions partners. And so I always say that if something like Google Drive or Dropbox is the brain, Asana is the hands and feet, right? And so all of the docs, all of the brainstorming sessions, all of the files, templates, everything would generally live inside of something like Google Drive, all right? And then they are linked within Asana, within that project. We set up our project either from a template, we set the timelines, we set the assignees, we have our subtasks. If any work is happening, if we're commenting on any of that work, if we're asking for updates to be made, if we're asking for revisions, if we're looking for status updates, if we're doing any kind of planning as a team, it's happening in Asana. We're talking about it in Asana. We're asking questions in Asana. And then we are always using like comments or the description to link back to a master file that's in something like a Google Drive or a Dropbox. And there are integrations that make that really seamless. But I don't think we're ever going to get away from a place where we can say there is a one fit solution for everything that we do, right? So we all just always want to simplify it. Really impressive that you don't use Slack. If I think about it, I mean, do we ever really need Slack? I mean, yes, we do. But if you set it up properly, like you can have effective communication with comments in Drive, with comments in Asana. In this example, if you're using HubSpot and you're a sales team, you can set up tasks and have comments and communications within the platform itself. So that's really interesting that you guys don't use it. But yeah, I think part of it is like trying to figure out how do we bring this together? How do we simplify it? Again, where are the redundancies and how can we make this easier for everybody?
Yeah, that's really helpful. And I always like feel good when experts like yourself suggest things that we are already kind of doing, but maybe not as well as we could be. So yeah, I'm always on the fence about Slack. We always get a lot of FOMO about it, but then at the same time,
yeah,
I just don't really see where it fits in. It seems like a big distraction. So we'll see where it goes. Sure. Yeah. So I'd love to talk more about Asana because, you know, it seems like you guys know a lot about Asana, you know, so I guess one question is what are some of what's some of the functionality of Asana that people don't notice at first? Is there anything that you feel like Asana is really strong with that people might take for granted?
There's two things I'm probably thinking about. One is like timeline views or Gantt chart views for like planning and how that ties into their like portfolio section. And then number two, what we do a lot of and we build out for our customers is an internal kind of knowledge base and how to use that within Asana as well. So yeah, I'll talk about the more known, which is like portfolios, any of the sites that you go to, many of the sites you go to that compare the different work management tools will kind of say like, oh, Asana doesn't have a Gantt view or, you know, a timeline view. And it's just because they name it something different, but I think that's probably one of the most underutilized, features in Asana right now. And then that ties back to the portfolio section, right? People love to use Asana as a to-do list, right? It looks great. You can assign your colors, but they're not really tapping into the core features of it. So having assignees, having due dates and actual durations for those tasks and being able to quickly assign, categorize and set due dates on the timeline. And then tie that back to the other projects that you have going on within your organization. So I talked off the top about overloading your team because you can't see capacity, right? So within portfolios, you can obviously see the work, you can obviously use workload, right? And as long as you are using some kind of point system or estimated hours, you can really see the real time capacity of your team and do better resource management on that tool. So yeah, that's typically like one of the biggest areas I see that is missed is really understanding how the low like day-to-day tasks tie into the projects, tie into the full workload of the team, and then how those things in the portfolio tie into the goals of the organization. So what are we working on internally to grow the business? If you're an agency or you're providing any kind of services for clients, it's how are we managing the work and the deliverables for our clients as well? And what does that mix really look like? So I think there's that like gap there where people either don't understand how to use it. And so they're just not. And then one big thing that we do is we create within any of our customer spaces, along with templates, along with workflows, along with setting up all of the infrastructure, is creating what I like to call the learning commons, where everything from like your virtual break room, right? So if you think about a break room where you're in an office or in a shared space, you know, everything from health and safety to the next meeting or, you know, who's in HR is posted on a bulletin board somewhere. So we create a space where all that is happening. If you're new to the team, this is who we are. This is who our customer is. This is our mission. This is how we got started. Here's the leadership team. Here's our team directory. Here are pictures of everyone on the team. Here's their Enneagram number, right? Here's their personality. Here are the results from their DISC test. So we can really get to meet people. Here's the tech we use. And here are all the SOPs that are connected to that tech we use if there are any questions. And then the biggest area where we come and provide support is creating an SOP index. where everything you do about your business, whether it's from leadership, whether it's from dev, it's admin, it's billing and finance, it's HR, it's all in one space. It's searchable. It's editable. And we encourage our teammates to take part in those processes. I think people like overlook that, and it's why they go to Notion, or it's why they go to Confluence. It's why they go to tools like Spaces from Teamwork, which are all fantastic tools. But again, if the work is happening in one place, we want to eliminate outside distractions and shiny object syndrome to keep it all in the same place. So that, again, that work about work is reduced. And so, yeah, it's, there's so much I can like talk forever on when
it comes to Asana. But it sounds like to conceptualize it, you have one brain and then you have one set of hands and feet. So your set of hands and feet could be an Asana or a Teamwork or Confluence or whatever else. So
exactly.
So you don't want to be adding more tools just to solve, add more problems basically. So that makes sense. And it seems like there's a lot of kind of, you know, getting the macro view from the micro. And with that, my guess is, it might be hard, or seems like it would be hard for a company like yours to figure out, okay, where does your job start and stop, right? Because it could obviously get into controllership, and then controllership could get into financial planning, which could get into sales and marketing and all that. So I'd love to kind of hear your take on that. Like, are you setting up, you know, integrations with Harvest and dealing with time tracking and then getting into QuickBooks? Like, how do you recommend kind of tying all these other areas together?
The use cases are obviously different as we move from company to company, but kind of that thought about like, where does it stop? That's a really difficult one to answer. Cause you can get super granular when it comes to a lot of these integrations. But I would say we're redeveloping kind of our website right now so that we can further explain this, but there's the admin and everything that happens around that in the business. There's the billing and finance that happens in the business. There's the team and resource management that happens in the business, right? There's the service delivery, right? There are all these different like buckets that we can pull from, and there's all the tech that can expand from that. And we're working on kind of a visual tool to help communicate that. But when it comes to like, if we were to use you guys as an example, you're using Drive.
Yeah.
Did I hear that? Yeah. Okay, great. So we have Drive, we have Asana. If resource management and capacity is an issue for you, then Harvest would absolutely be the tool. And then it's, which way do we want to go? Do we want to see resource and like forecasting by using like their forecast tool? Do we need high level stuff? Is our issue in we're not charging enough, right? Do we need to like really tap into the data that Harvest gives us and use a tool like Parakeeto to better understand and estimate time, right? Where does the breakdown happen? Is it in our proposals? Is it in our sales system? Are we sending one page quotes? Or are we doing really in-depth reviews and providing an easy way for customers to digest that information, for us to present that information, and then for them to pay, right, for that engagement to begin? So there's definitely lots of different ways that you can, you know, go about it as far as integrating tools. I don't know if I have an answer for that, but
that's helpful. Yeah. So it sounds like I'm almost thinking about it as, okay, if there is an integration with the Harvest of the world, and then that has to happen through Asana, then, and you require people to track their time, you know, as much as they can, then that sort of forces people to have to make these things talk together and have to like work in one place, you know, the hands and feet, so to speak. So I think I'm on shows a lot and people ask me for the silver bullet, what works for everybody. And I get that, that never happens, but I think you've conceptualized it pretty well.
What I can say though, like, and it goes back to an earlier point, is you need to kind of know what is good for you, right? You need to have thought about that process. You should have worked through it with your team, and you should essentially be doing it manually, right? And then it's, can this thing be automated? And then we move to another tool. Is there something else we can introduce to make this easier? And again, that's always linked around a pain point. So I think, it's important for the company to know what that is. And then we investigate further to see if we can optimize it.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Let's talk about SOPs a little bit. So I've heard so many different schools of thought on SOPs. I've heard people say leadership should never build SOPs, just specialists should. I've heard, you know, friends of mine that have companies like mine will say, you know, hey, I'll make a quick video on what I want conceptually, then I'll delegate the SOPs to somebody on the team. I've heard everything in between. So I'd love to hear your take on just like, what's a good way to think about SOPs.
Yeah. My kind of rule of thumb is like, it's everyone's responsibility. Mm-hmm. And sometimes SOPs can be like, they can do more damage than they can do good, right? Because we become like, so like stringent in how this thing is done. And there's no, flexibility or space for like autonomy within the team. And so oftentimes there are ways where like, based on your schedule and your way of doing things, you know, a team member has, you know, discovered a better way to approach that process. Right. And so then let's look at that SOP and see where we can, you know, make it simpler. There are steps that don't work, or tech has changed, been updated, and this doesn't work anymore. And so I think we need the help of our team members, but I think it's got to start from leadership. I really think it does, because that comes down to culture. If the leadership is not involved, if they're not reviewing, if they're not asking and encouraging people to be involved in that, and if they're not taking the lead and showing how those things should be documented, then I think it's going to fall apart. So my opinion is that it absolutely should begin with leadership. It should be shown how it is to be done. It should be a regular practice to update them, review them. If there's a new tool, if there's a new process, if there's a new understanding around work, it should be document it, communicate it, implement it, right? And that's where that like freedom comes for them to say, like, I'm owning this process. And we actually have an internal way where we have a board where any process documentation that needs to be done, the idea can be put there, and we can, like you said, put in that video, and then someone else can document it. But I absolutely think like it should come from leadership. And in the creation of a lot of these, like, people have different learning styles as well. So I think we need to be sensitive to that, where we can have the written SOP, we can have the visual SOP. Are you taking screenshots? How are you laying that out? So I think a mixture of video, audio, video, a mixture of written is helpful in a lot of cases. And unless those conventions are established with leadership, because if you think about it, that's an SOP in itself, right? How do we document our processes at this place that we work? So yeah, I've always been of the opinion that it should start with leadership, and then it's communicated and trickles down from there.
Yeah, that makes sense. And for us, we've been more and more video heavy, just because it's so much easier, yeah. At least for me personally, yeah, to make videos than to have to write a bunch of things. But we'll see where it goes. You know, I think that people learn in different ways, and that's always the challenge, is creating the right medium, you know, for the person you're talking to as well. So there's probably a lot to go into there. I guess one question I have is like, what? How do you think about a leadership dashboard and the things that go into that? I'm sure it really varies depending on the organization, but like, for example, just to use us as the guinea pig, like ours right now is kind of a home spreadsheet, you know, with a few key metrics and then some tabs going into economics and acquisition and some other stuff like that. I'd love to hear your thoughts on it.
What are you using for your dashboard?
Just a Google spreadsheet right now. And then it's basically monthly numbers that get updated every month. So there's like a monthly recurring task to update certain things. Yeah. And I can go further into that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is an interesting question, because I mean, with Ditto as a whole, like the offering is business and process enablement as one arm, then there's like sales and marketing enablement. And then there is like the dev and like API side of the business as well, when it comes to actually tying it all together. So I think when it comes to dashboards, it's important for the leadership to have that view, because the last thing you want to be spending your time doing is, you know, drilling down into the individual work to see what's happening. I think this is an area that's not perfect just yet. I would love it if like a tool like Asana, for example, had a dashboard at the organization level that could, you know, bring in the time tracking data, could bring in like the time spent in phase data, right? And could have it all in one spot to, again, reduce the in-between. But yeah, I don't think this is perfect yet, but I think like tools like Grow do this really well. They are phenomenal when it comes to dashboards. They're a bit on the pricier side, but I think as far as visibility and a turnkey solution, they're probably the closest when it comes to setting something like that up. If you are pretty heavy in Asana, Tableau is a great extension. A bit harder to like get going because it's more of an empty box. But yeah, there are tools like that that have quite a few integrations, and we rely on pretty heavily for a lot of the visibility that we need. But I mentioned off the top, like we're also HubSpot solutions partners. And so like, I think for the sales team, like a lot of the stuff that they need can happen right in there. And if your job in leadership is to drive sales and drive revenue, then I think you can get away with a lot of that within a tool like HubSpot and use their dashboards and analytics. So it really just depends on like your involvement, where that cuts off, where the overlap happens as far as your team goes. But I mean, like Databox, if you're in like an agency and you're already delivering reports for your clients, I think you can get a lot of visibility creating like data boards through their tools. And so like, it just depends on what like really works for you, what information you need, because there are gaps, right? With the integrations, not everything is open on the API just yet when it comes to tools. And so you kind of have to know. And that's the other thing. You have to know what you want to see and know to like go and look for it with a lot of these tools. Cause there's no like quick start, you know, sales dashboards. So yeah, really interesting question and something that you can spend hours trying to refine and update. Right. But
it sounds like the most important thing is just figuring out what you actually need to measure and so on. I guess as a quick sidebar, as long as we're nerding out on tools, what's your take on Airtable? There's lots of different opinions on it. People love it, you know, kind of culty about it. I'd love to hear your thoughts on it.
Yeah, I'll say kind of quickly, I don't know enough about it. I've used it a handful of times and it's mainly been to migrate out of Airtable into another tool. What I love about it though is its flexibility as far as the different views go. I mean, it's super familiar, obviously, which is why it's doing really well, because if you're coming from a place where data is what you're looking at every day, then Airtable makes a lot of sense. Unless I'm wrong, there are gaps right now as far as ownership goes, right? So like who's doing what by when, and having checks in place to make sure that those things are top of mind. Based on my experience, like that's been a huge gap. But again, on the flexibility side, when it comes to developers, I know that a lot of developers in this space love the tool because of its flexibility, because of the ability to tap in either through a quick zap or through a custom API that you can like make the tool really, really work for you. But I think when it comes to ownership and visibility, unless there's a specific view set up for that and you have to really drill down to the filtering, I think there are other tools that can make it a lot simpler, and which is why we often migrate people away from it. But I think they're fantastic and have a lot of way to go from a visibility standpoint. But I wish I had more experience with it so I could like really drill in and answer that.
I think that's still helpful though, just to kind of figure out, you know, where the gaps live. And I think that's a good way to think about every tool. It's like, you're never going to look for perfection. So
exactly.
I just with that, just kind of getting towards the end of the time, I'd love to do, you know, this could probably be a whole other episode, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on team meetings, and to give you a constraint, you know, because meetings could go anywhere.
Yeah.
Let's say it's the all hands meeting, right? The let's say it's once a week, you've got an agency, they've got 10 or 15 clients, they've been doing everything, you know, C plus B average level and Asana and Drive and maybe Slack. Yeah. Like what have you seen your better clients focus on during those all hands meetings? If that makes sense.
Yeah. It's keeping them simple. Really straightforward, asking like as little questions as possible, because if we wait for the all hands meetings to like really talk about the problems that exist or work that needs to be done, then I think we're doing ourselves a disservice. So really the all hands, it assumes that everyone already knows what they're doing And based on the results from last week or whatever your frequency looks like, that this is just a quick check-in. And so, I mean, ours happens to be Monday mornings at 10 a.m. Eastern. And so I'm coming out of that and, you know, jumping on this podcast. But really, it's here's our agenda. It's typically templated. And so we know exactly what we're going to be talking about every single time. And so there's a space for what we need to discuss internally, what's happening this week. There's a space for clients. There's a space for anything that's general or new business. And then by the end of it, it's what's the big rock you're moving this week. And then towards the end of the week, we have a quick roundup typically where it's what rock did you move? What was blocked and why? What are you going into next week focusing on? And then it's how are you resting this weekend, right? Because as much as we work and produce, I think it's important to like have that balance. So we're talking about how are we going to take a break? How are we going to rejuvenate, right? How are we going to relax as well? And so anyways, back to the question, it's just simple template. Everyone knows kind of what is expected of them already. And one big thing that we do is as we're going through our agenda, we're getting those updates. We have people that are responsible for certain sections of that meeting. And then if anything needs to be actioned right away, we're creating those actions and subtasks within Asana so that nothing is missed. And then our recap is literally, all right, so we all agreed we're going to do these six things. You're going to meet with this person. You need to do this by then. And then we're off of that meeting. So I think the simpler you have it, the more templated it is, the easier you can work through those meetings because they can get pretty dry, yeah. Right? But I think, yeah, stick to the script and everyone's happy at the end of it.
Yeah, that sounds great. It makes a lot of sense. I think that's a really good framework. Yeah, and I guess beyond that, well, you know, what are you guys up to now? Any interesting projects? What's keeping you busy?
Like I said, we're redesigning the Ditto website. The calculator is going to be going away. Actually, it's funny that you brought that up, but yeah, we're redesigning our website. And with that, we're working on, what I like to think of a really comprehensive, ebook as well that we want to distribute to some of our customers and get some people, reading because it's really calling out a lot of these challenges. And a lot of the stuff that you and I talked about today, we're walking people step by step through what it looks like to eliminate work about work. How do you actually estimate? I like to say I'm an aspiring project manager working towards my PMP. And so a lot of like the stuff that we do every single day is outlined in this new ebook, how to estimate properly, how to eliminate scope creep, how to align your team, how to budget properly, how to forecast, how to build out projects, right? To eliminate a lot of the work about work in the in-between stuff. So I think that's one thing that we're all kind of focused on right now and getting that out to the public. And so, yeah, I think, yeah, within the next couple of weeks, we can look for things like that because there's definitely gaps and definitely issues that we're trying to solve all the time. And I think this piece of content will help a lot of people get a lot closer to some of the answers that awesome. They may be seeking.
Yeah, that's great. We'll have to get that linked up. And I guess to close things out, how can people get in touch with you?
Email is great. It's Marquis, MARQUIS at thinkditto.com. I spend a lot of my time on LinkedIn. And if you search Marquis Murray on YouTube, I have a channel called Asana Solutions, where we mainly talk about Asana and how to get everything going. But LinkedIn or YouTube is great. And if those don't work for you, you can catch me at email.
Cool. Yeah. And we're starting to do more with YouTube and that sounds like way more actionable, right? If we can just plug people into a screen share and show them how to do things. That's great. So
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Look forward to checking that out. Marquis, thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome, Dan. It was good to be here. Thanks again.
Yeah. Likewise.
Thanks again for listening to the Digital Agency Growth Podcast. Again, today's episode is sponsored by our company, Sales Schema. We are a fractional new business team for growth-focused boutique agencies and related marketing service companies. But even if you're not at the point of hiring us yet, I still really want to do you solid by giving you access for free, by the way, to our latest recorded video training. And that is titled Relationship-Driven New Business at Scale, emphasis on at scale. And basically, this is how we secure around 5 to 20 weekly brand agency relationships for each one of our clients using tasteful email outreach centered on personal and or business commonalities that our clients share with the people they're reaching out to. So a few things that we cover the two big shifts that have informed this big strategy shift and why we think you should rethink the way that you are doing new business, most likely at your agency. We talk about dozens of specific commonalities that we use to build relationships between our clients and brand side decision makers. We go over a simple, manageable follow-up process that you or your team can use, even if you're busy, even if you're in a mixed sales client service role. And we actually go over specific copy examples that you can use to get inspired and build your own campaigns. So if you'd like to get access to this roughly 30-minute video training, you can do that by going to salesschema.com/relationships. Again, that's salesschema.com/relationships, plural. Thanks again for listening, and I look forward to catching you on the next episode of the Digital Agency Growth Podcast.